This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
It's quicker than E-Trade.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Congratulations, you're about to be the proud owner of some bank stock. This morning, the President and the Treasury Secretary outlined the new plan for some of that $700 billion. It is to invest $250 billion directly into the banks and buy up their stock. Paulson says he reluctantly embraced the idea.
Government owning a stake in any private U.S. company is objectionable to most Americans, me included. Yet the alternative of leaving businesses and consumers without access to financing is totally unacceptable.
As for the details, about half the money will go into big banks, about half the money into small banks. The FDIC will insure most new debt issued by the banks and expand its banking insurance. Let's get a couple different perspectives on this new plan. We'll begin with economist Gary Schilling. Gary, what do you think?
It depends on how you look at it. If you look at it strictly as an investment, it's highly risky. Hey, notice that the U.S. is not getting as good a deal as Warren Buffett. He got a 10% dividend yield from Goldman Sachs preferred stocks. The U.S. government only gets 5%. Now, from an overall standpoint, though, you can say if this is what it takes to preserve the financial system, then it's really cheap. But again, it goes back to this idea of the international competition of this thing. It isn't something that Paulson by nature would introduce. I think it's more than anything being forced to be competitive globally.
So you're saying that the U.S. government is being peer pressured?
Absolutely. Peer pressured by the likes of the U.K., Germany, France, Italy. You run throughout Europe.
Well, if not this, what else could be done?
That's the $64 trillion question. And to me, the big problem with this is neither the policymakers in Washington nor the financial institutional leaders nor investors have approached this whole situation as anything but an ad hoc, crisis-by-crisis affair. And I think this latest maneuver is symptomatic of that.
All right, Gary, thanks for joining us.
Okay. Interesting times.
It certainly is. All right, not a big fan of the new plan. Now let's bring in our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell. Chris, your take on taxpayers investing in banks?
Oh, I think it's a great idea. I had to stop for a moment. I just never would have imagined that the U.S. government would be spending $250 billion buying big chunks of Citigroup, mm-hmm. Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Goldman Sachs. So you have to take that pause. But what we're seeing is the moment when we say goodbye to the Depression and hello to the recession. I think that what is happening here in the U.S. mirrored in Europe, basically we are truly having a coordinated effort by the central bankers and by governments to stem the panic, to stem the credit crunch, break the logjam, whatever metaphor you want to use. This nationalization is the key part of it. It's happening here. It's happening in Europe, and I think that it will bring, you know, the jargon term we're all starting to become comfortable with, liquidity to the market.
But as we just heard, there has been a lot of peer pressure here from Europe. How do we know that this is the way to go? Because it sounds pretty risky taking on bank stocks that who knows how much more value these banks might lose.
That's right. I mean, the equity stake could disappear, but peer pressure is a good way to put it. We live in a global economy. And to a large extent, Scott, we have a global solution that's evolving. And it's not just buying the U.S. government buying preferred stock. There are two other factors here. Guarantee all senior debt issued by banks over the next 3 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about that. And then the other thing is unlimited unlimited FDIC insurance for non-interest-bearing accounts, which is essentially saying to small business here in the United States, small business, you're okay. But this is going to grab people's attention. It's going to, I think, bring some confidence back into the market, and I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. We're going to see investors cheering this move.
All right, the positive take there. Chris Farrell, our economics correspondent. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Scott.
And sure enough, investors are cheering it. The Dow is up another 138 points to 9,526. The S&P 500 has gained 25 already this morning. In Japan today, the Nikkei closed 14% higher. It's never done that before. In Europe, the markets are up 4 to 5% so far.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by the Medtronic Foundation, letting listeners know that October is Sudden Cardiac Arrest Awareness Month. More about SCA risks and treatment at hearthelp.com. And by gather.com, where friends keep up with the people, conversations, and moments that matter most. People are talking about business at gather.com. Conversations from the Corner Office, Dialogues with Top CEOs, is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management. Online at shrm.org.
Nonprofits account for about 10% of the U.S. economy. And of course, when the economy goes south, so do contributions to nonprofits. Since this could be a pretty rough downturn, we thought we'd check in and see how some nonprofits are doing so far. Here's Rachel Dornhill.
Spirit in the House is a Minneapolis arts festival that's going into its fifth year. Keeping money in the house has become the big challenge for Executive Director Dean Seal. He said fundraising was moving ahead pretty well until a month and a half ago. Since then, it dropped off, and he decided to cancel a benefit he planned for later this month.
You know, I might get people at the $20 level, but I won't get anybody at the $500 level, so we're just putting it off.
Chronicle of Philanthropy editor Stacey Palmer says small organizations like Seal's are the first to feel the pinch. Other groups that have already taken a beating include the many charities funded by financial institutions.
Groups that are in New York that are dependent on banking money, those are the groups that are feeling a big hit right away.
Palmer says arts organizations suffer most during tough times. Donors tend to favor social organizations, groups they feel are helping the most in need. I'm Rachel Dornhelm for Marketplace.
If you have a nonprofit story to share as Marketplace continues its coverage of the financial crisis, log on to our website, marketplace.org, and let us know. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.